20 years of Homecoming, 30 years of the vocal band, 40 years of Because He Lives, 75 years of Bill Gaither, and the celebration starts right now.
Welcome to Daniel Britt and Friends, an hour of good music and fun conversations featuring gospel music's brightest new artists, as well as legendary tributes and memories from its past. Now, here is Daniel Britt.
It's part two with Bill Gaither celebrating his 75th birthday and, of course, these other wonderful milestones. And we recounted those years of memories on last week's show. I'm sitting with Bill Gaither, and the conversation continues this week with more of these wonderful sounds that Mr. Gaither has made for gospel music through the Homecoming series, the Gaither Trio, the Gaither Vocal Band, the songwriting of Bill and Gloria Gaither, the wisdom and leadership in the music industry, and just plain old horse sense, growing up on a farm in Indiana, and now having lived life 75 years wiser.
So we've talked a little bit about retirement as we look to the future, and that's not, you don't really think, but at the same time, they say you've got to have mission, you've got to have vision, you've got to be forward thinking, you've got to have some kind of momentum. So as you look at the future of what you're doing, what your companies have as far as the music industry goes, is it a tricky time in music? Is it, obviously the truths of the gospel need to be shared, community still needs to be built, but when you look at maybe the marketplace has changed, the way people socialize has changed, it's a more connected world. What is Gaither Music in particular doing or looking at for the future and preparing for what's to come?
Well, the one thing that started happening, I think about 20 years ago, is and is true in our home. The stuff that we really want to spend some time seeing and listening to is stuff that we can get on a DVD, or if there's a movie we want to see. We don't go out much to movies anymore because Gloria and I can just go get them and and play them at home. And with the equipment that we have at home anymore, it's a pretty good way to experience things. Now, thankfully, I think for gospel music, you can do all of that, and I've done it. But there is nothing that still takes the place of being in person with a different set of people every night. And I'm talking about the audience here. The audience is the thing that makes a difference. And you get a group of people together. We've done a lot of international travel, and it's amazing just the ethnic mix that happens when you're someplace internationally. But the same thing happens in the States. I think if artists have something to offer at that point that can bring people together, that is not like just playing a record. Mm-hmm. I mean, something different is happening, and it's pretty much like magic. I hate to use the word magic because as soon as I use that, you'll get somebody else. Bill Gaither used the word magic, but I'm talking about the unexpected. The thing that just brings goosebumps on you, right. You know what? You can't get this at home sitting listening to it. And I've had people say that, we've watched you on TV for years, but man, to be in this crowd of 10,000 people and sense what is going on, that is another thing. And I'm glad I came out because I thought, it's good, but it can't be any better than that. And they said, you know what? It was better. I'm trying to answer your question about the future. I don't know. The future will be what it will be, but I think the quality of what we do has to be up to a certain level. And I think spiritually we have to have some things to say that are important to people.
I don't want to spend my time writing songs to answer questions that nobody's even asking anyhow. When the house is burning to the ground, there's just no time to stand around arranging all the pictures on the walls. I wanna spend my life giving folks the living water and the bread of life that just can't live without. Instead of spending all that time writing songs to answer questions that nobody's even asking anyhow.
don't wanna spend my life preaching sermons that give answers to the questions no one's asking anywhere. When there's so much pain and hurting, there's no time to be searching for the needles in the haystacks that aren't there. I wanna spend my time wearing myself out for Jesus with the news a cure's been found to heal our land. Instead of making lists, inventing creeds that aren't concerned with people's needs, I'll show them how to touch the nail-scarred hand. I don't wanna spend my time praying prayers, bombarding heaven with a request to rain down fire on saints who care. In our methods we may differ, but if Christ the Lord we live for, may we not forget the enemy is out there. I wanna spend my life making my part of the body of the Savior work with smooth efficiency. One may be the knee, and I'm the toes, I'm the chin,
and I'm the nose.
But listen, brother, we have need of thee. I don't wanna spend my time writing songs to answer questions that nobody's even asking anyhow. When the house is burning to the ground, there's just no time to stand around arranging all the pictures on the wall. I wanna spend my life forgiving folks the living water and the bread of life they just can't live without. Instead of spending all that time writing songs that answer questions that nobody's even asking anyhow. Instead of spending all that time writing songs that answer questions that nobody's even asking anyhow.
Till eternity takes it away. You're losing the handle you hold, a slip on the grip of control, crying out why the silence. Then the voice of the Father with the sound like no other, a voice ringing clear through the cool of the day, saying, come home to me. No easy way out.
sight. The darkness has smothered the light. But then the voice of the Father, with the sound
Vocal Band from the Peace of the Rock Project. You're listening to Daniel Britton Friends, a celebration of Bill Gaither's 75th birthday, 20 years of homecoming, 30 years of the Gaither Vocal Band, and 40 years of the profound song, Because He Lives. The celebration began last week and continues through this week. Part 2 with Bill Gaither now continues. I was with Russ and Tori Taff yesterday, and they brought up this phrase that I'm sure is tossed around in these circles a lot, art and commerce, and making those two agree, but at the same time, they're two separate things. And as an artist, you want to let something breathe, you want the creativity to come out, but on the marketing side, you've got maybe a very narrow window to get your message heard, or they're going to turn the dial, or they're going to skip on to the next song. That's always been a balancing act. In the old days,
yep,
when the 45s came out, and nowadays with iTunes, it's still the same battle, ultimately, isn't it?
Yeah, basically, they're new little babies that are being born saying, hey, look at me, look at me, look at me. You know, I'm pretty, too.
Right.
You know,
right.
And I don't. When people say, what's your favorite song, they're all my babies. And, yeah. And if I said I liked one baby better than the other baby, you know.
Yeah.
Now, the people will eventually say which baby they like the best, you know.
As we're talking about that, I've got a clip here. This is from Tom Hare, and I spoke with him, and he's a writer for Relevant and Results magazine, and he had all this insight behind infomercials, believe it or not. You know, sometimes these infomercials we see are very, very cheesy and staged and planned, but they work. And so there was some interesting things he had to say. But when we got to the subject of music and specifically Gaither Homecoming, listen to this.
Gaither does these video shoots where he brings in tons of gospel, even country artists, and they sit around and they do music together. It's almost like a mass all-star choir. It's been hugely successful for the past 20 years.
Right.
Anyway, he does these infomercials. He's been doing this for quite some time where he'll take full-length video and DVDs and he'll make them into a 44-minute type format program and put in the toll-free number to order more. And he's been hugely successful. Have you heard of that specifically or in that same category of selling like Time Life music collections? Is that a good way to sell them?
It is, actually. I mean, actually, I have heard of that specifically because in the category, in the music category, which is a big, big category, both CD music and DVD movies and TV shows are a huge category for our market. You know, Time Life has even gotten on the bandwagon. They put out a number of of Christian rock and gospel music CD collections that I've seen advertised over the years, and it definitely plays a role in our business. I've seen those CD collections listed in our monthly rankings before.
Wow. So, yeah. It moves some product.
It certainly does. Yeah. Music, especially nowadays, is looking for any way to move product because of the changeover from CDs to digital music, and they're looking for ways to keep the CD business alive and the DVD business alive, because the DVD people are fearful, of course, of right. the digital taking over on the movie and TV side as well.
So with that, I hear maybe innovation back when you were doing, and I think it was with the Nashville Network, and you had the programs, as we mentioned there, it would abbreviated version of a video, you would put it on, give a toll-free number, and then the order started coming in. And so that was, did you see that as innovative at the time? Were you ever even maybe challenged or criticized because of doing that?
You know what? I'm not sure that I particularly sat down and did that. I was convinced that if people would really have a chance to hear this music, the music that I had grown up with and loved, if they could hear it performed well and in a good setting, because I'd seen a lot of stuff pretty, you know, done not well, that I think that people would vote yes, and we were not wrong on that. But as far as any long-range plans of that, I was just so excited to find a whole bunch of people who thought that stuff that I thought was very special and needed to be preserved said, "Hey, Bill, we vote with you," because they would write me and say,
"Yeah,
I grew up in the same place. You may have been in a little town in Indiana, but I was in a small town in Texas.
Right,
I can remember
right.
when I first heard this, and it changed my life. And to be able to hear this again, I mean, I felt good about that. I mean, I was connecting with people all over the country, you know, California, Wyoming, to say, you know, I grew up in the first gospel quartet I heard, and they would tell about the experience of going to the concerts. And I thought that day was over, and I would never be able to experience it, again. I think we learn from our past, both the mistakes that we've made and, you know, and the good things that we have done. And so that gave me a lot of pride to be part of that.
I just feel like something good is about to happen. I just feel like something good is on its way. He has promised that he'd open all of heaven. And brother, it could happen.
Yeah.
As you look back over 75 years, what is a top highlight or success that you're proud of?
Well, I think first of all, it would have been, you know, meeting Gloria, and I met her and fell in love with her because she was a beautiful gal who was a great English and Spanish or French teacher, and we started a romance and got married. And then as a little bonus, she said, "What do you do other than teach?" And I say, "Oh, I'm trying to write some songs. Let me hear some of your songs." So I played her a couple of them, rather not knowing, you know, whether or not she thought it was good or not, because she was quite an academic. She said, "That's good." You know, I played her some more. And so I started working on them. She said, "You know what? That's a pretty hackneyed phrase that's been used a lot. Why don't you try this? Okay, we'll try that. We'll try that." And became, I think, a pretty good writing team. That was all a bonus, you know. Yeah. And then to have Jim Meyer from CSAC call me and say, "Hey, the Imperials just recorded one." You'd, "Oh, that's great." And then have him call me and say, "Hey, by the way, the Black Witch, oh, that's wonderful." And then one day he called and said, "Elvis just recorded He Touched Me." And I said, "Wow, this is getting kind of crazy." So that would have been an exciting time.
And now I am no longer the same, for He touched me. Something happened, and now I know He touched me and made me whole.
And then we went out. You know, I can remember going to Tarrant County Convention Center in Fort Worth. And in fact, I had a friend who knew the manager there, and he said, "There are only two people who fill this, 14,000 people." He said, "Elvis comes and fills it. And then there's a school teacher and his wife and brother that just sit around a piano and sing, and people sing with them." And they sell it. They're from Indiana. He said, the Gaithers just said, yeah. So that was a pretty exciting time.
Sure.
And then to come back to that same building about 20 years later, with the Texas Homecoming, and sell out 14,000 that night so quickly, 2 hours sold out.
Wow.
And then to have to do a matinee and put it on tape, and we got it on tape. Those are some pretty exciting nights.
Soon this life will all be over, and our pilgrimage will end. Soon we'll take a heavenly journey, be at home again with friends. Heaven's gates are standing open, waiting for our entrance there. Some sweet day we're going over, all the beauties there to share.
I can kind of see you maybe on the Vocal Band bus or with some of the artists backstage who are going through maybe a crisis or are going through a struggle of their own. I can see Bill come alongside and say, yeah, but let me tell you a time when I failed and got up, cleaned myself off, and moved on, learned from the mistakes. Do you have anything like that that you find yourself kind of referring back to over the past 75 years with young artists or with anybody really?
I have several, kicks that I get on from time to time, but one of my kicks is in our culture, we have no theology, or we do have a theology, we just don't use it, but most people do not have a theology or a philosophy or a psychology for the word loss, and because we're taught to be quote-unquote winners, right?
Right.
Well, I think we need to examine that in the biblical light. What does it mean to win? Was Paul a winner or not? I mean, he's, all of those early, Peter and all of them died terrible, terrible deaths, and that is the ultimate loss. And I often tell the young artists, first of all, I don't think you know the difference between Alpha and Omega and the beginning and the end. Sometimes when you think it's a loss, it is a beginning to something else fantastic. To be honest with you, at the end of the trio career, we had done our thing, done it pretty well, but by the mid-80s, we had done that about as well as you could do it, and the people weren't interested anymore. So it kind of seemed like an ending, and I thought, well, I'll spend more time with the college, help some young, I'm always a teacher, I'll spend some time with teaching. In the meantime, I discovered a video camera and said, let's. And then what I thought was an ending became a beginning. And so I try to pass that on to young kids because they get so discouraged at losses. Now, I'm not talking about losing because I think God does want us to be winners. So I'm not going to argue with the. With the theologians who talk about God, what you a winner, because you are a winner even in loss. You exactly. are still a winner. And I think we need to define that better because on a given day, the other team is ahead of us. In fact, I've been, I'm a big Colts fan, and I've come home from the game, and Gloria said, did we win? I said, I don't know. At the end of the game, we had more points than they did. I'm not sure we won.
That's right.
And there are days when we came home, and we didn't have as many points as they did. Did we win? No, we lost, but I think we were the better team,
I'd won all I could win. There was no place I hadn't been, but my heart, it was so needy and so poor. Then I heard him gently say, why don't you just lose it all and find my way? So I gave it up, and I found it all and more.
I lost it all to find everything. I died above earth to be done again.
to lose. Oh, I found out how to win.
Oh, I lost it all to find everything.
Racing to survive. And you know what? I stepped on just anybody in my way. Then I watched my schemes all die, and I realized that I could have new life because the old had died that day.
Obviously, the wisdom and the position that you're in, and especially now, like we've talked about with mentoring the young artists, there is leadership, and the buzzword right now, which is not new. I mean, Jesus taught it, is servant leadership. And as we've mentioned, you've made a career of making everybody else look good. What leadership skills do you think that today's generation is missing? Is it the servant leadership part, or are we doing okay there and we got some other areas we got to work on?
Well, I mean, this could be a whole sermon and a whole program by itself. Take the issue of pride. I mean, we talk about, when we talk about sin, we just usually go down the Ten Commandments, you know, which is the biggest command. Of course, Jesus said it best. You should love the Lord, thy God, right, God with all your heart, and then love your neighbor as yourself. The problem is we can all say those words. So we can say servant, and I'm a servant leadership and all of that. But the interesting one that C.S. Lewis talks about in Mere Christianity, he said, to me, it's still the big sin. You know what it is? Is it lying? Is it murder? He said the big sin is pride.
Yeah.
And I just wrote a devotional on pride, and I said, Anytime I'm in a group of 10 people, I say, what's the first thing you think about when you hear something good about pride? I mean, you read something good about pride. And I said, before you answer that question, let me say the first thing I think about. If there are 10 people in the room, I think about the 9 other people who really need to listen to this besides me. And the hardest thing with teaching, you can learn it, and you can say the words. You can run it forwards. You can run it backwards, and still miss the sin in your own life, the pride in your own life, and the lack of servanthood in your own life. And you can say all you want to say is, "I really rejoice when the other guy wins," but there's a little part of you that says, "I would like to have been ahead of him." And it is human.
Oh, yeah.
Nature.
Yeah.
And to do that, it comes out in decision making. And let me get real personal here. It comes out in decision making when you're on the platform singing with 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 or 20 other groups. And that has been the case for years. That was the case with Mozart. Salieri died a terrible death of just envy of wanting to be a Mozart. He was not a Mozart. I mean, and when I look at the gifted people in our field, you know, I just say, you know, Dottie had some better ideas of melodies than I did. She could soar on melodies better than I did. Andre just, I have to sit back and say, in this area, you know, he was better than I. You know, now I can brag on Gloria. But I think when we talk about any of these spiritual things, we can spiritualize all we want to, but the bottom line is, how does this fit us personally? And is there still pride in our lives? And the answer is, there probably is.
Everybody experiences it. I don't care what walk of life you are, and that is criticism. But when you're on a public platform and you put yourself out there with music, with statements, with positions that you take, boy, you are setting yourself up for praise or criticism. Yeah. How do you deal with criticism?
Well, first of all, I shouldn't brag about this because it shows my ignorance. But at my age, I just have decided that I'm going to stay away from the. I've never got acquainted with a computer, and so so when I talk to some of my young artists who are on their computers all the time, and they'll get some information. You know, somebody can say anything they want to say, sure, say on a computer, and I say that in jest. I ought to beat myself up for not using computer. But at the same time, I had an old teacher who became the president of our university, Dr. Nicholson, who later on served on the board. And presidents of Christian colleges always get criticisms because there are always folks out there who spiritually think that he's leading a bunch of young people in the wrong way. And he would get some pretty crazy, irrational, angry, sometimes stupid kind of criticism. But he would read the letters, he would meet with them, he would talk with them. And I said, Dr. Nick, why do you do that? He said, Bill, we can learn from our critics, even though it's delivered irrationally, emotionally, illogically, and sometimes pretty unspiritually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
In an angry, un-Christ-like way, we can still learn from our critics. And I've done that. And I've always, for most criticism, if there is a name and an address, I will sit down and answer it. And on many occasions, I've picked up the phone to call a person. I can remember one weekend, a person was criticized me for not featuring David Phelps more. It was a 3-day weekend. And was being critical of, I think, probably Mark and Michael for taking too many solos, you know, and attributing a bad attitude towards the guys who were quote unquote hogging the stage. Mm. So I called him up, called the person up personally, and the person, I'm not even going to say he or she, okay? But the person said, "I can't believe you're calling." I said, "Yeah, I would have called you to tell you the first night David was in good voice." But by morning, he was really suffering. And he said, if you can take it easy for me the rest of the weekend, I will appreciate it. Because for tenor singing high notes, you're going to have nights where it's just not there, you know. Mm. Mm. And the person really apologized. Said, oh, I'm sorry. I jumped too soon. But I do think we have to reach out to our critics and answer.
We're not in a perfect world, and I don't think this is going to be the formula for every case, but I think what I'm hearing is communication diffuses a lot of that. Even if you go to that point where you have to agree to disagree, at least you've had a conversation, and it's not, you know, because then you've got probably a face to the person and a soul to the person, and you've kind of dealt human to human there, not just attack and then retract and everything. So that's good.
The answer, though, is not to isolate yourself I've heard of one artist who said, I just tell them I don't want to see the critical mail. I said, are you serious? I mean, I do.
Yeah.
I still listen to it. And sometimes I write back and say, you know what, my friend, you were right. I'm sorry. Forgive me.
Jesus. Jesus.
Harmonize it.
Jesus. There's just something about that name.
Master.
The dead. In the name of Jesus, I've seen sin-hardened men melted, derelicts transformed, the lights of hope put into the eyes of a hopeless child. At the name of Jesus, hatred and bitterness turn to love and forgiveness. Arguments cease. I've heard a mother softly breathe his name at the bedside of a child delirious from fever, and have watched as that little body grew quiet and the fevered brow cool. I've sat beside a dying saint, her body racked with pain, when those final fleeting seconds summoned her last ounce of ebbing strength to whisper her sweetest name. Jesus. Jesus. Emperors have tried to destroy it. Philosophies have tried to stamp it out. Tyrants have tried to wash it from the face of the earth with the very blood of those who claimed it. Yet it still stands. And there shall be that final day when every voice that has ever uttered a sound, every voice of Adam's race, shall rise in one mighty chorus to proclaim the name of Jesus. For in that day every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess that Jesus Christ is truly Lord. So you see, it was not mere chance that caused an angel one night long ago to say to a virgin maiden, his name shall be called Jesus. Jesus. Say that name with me, Jesus. Ah, there is something about that name. Now sing it.
Kings and kingdoms will all pass away, but there's something about that name.
Bill Gaither's 75th birthday is this year, and we're celebrating a lot of these career highlights and celebrating his life. And faith, obviously, in our style of music is more than just another style to listen to. It is the faith, the gospel message. So your own faith journey, I don't think anybody's where they want to be spiritually. In your God story, in your journey with Christ, I think you've mentioned it on videos, you've had moments of doubt, you've had rough spots. What have been some of the best learning experiences in your faith, I guess? Maybe the parts where you really were stretched and grew.
Gloria speaks more in person than I do, and she always asks the question, how many of you have learned great truths when you were winning, everything was good, the kids were perfect, and no problems? How many of you learned great things? And a few people hold up their hands. How many of you have learned when you were at the lowest point of your life, you have lost, and it seemed like the losses keep coming, and it seems like you're getting close to Job? How many of you have learned the real things about life? And about everybody holds up her hands. And she says, then why do we work so hard to try to avoid those times? Those are the times when we are actually growing and learning. I would say the biggest thing I've learned by living this old 75 is the word perspective. And the bottom line of the Bible is trying to tell another generation, you think you're the first person who's ever gone through this. Grow up. Get it in perspective. It's not as big as you think it is. My dad was interesting in my life because he went through a lot of stuff, not unlike anybody who lives that long. He said, I would be in the middle of a serious problem. I'd say, Dad, I'm so worried about this. He said, oh, Bill, it's probably not as bad as you think it is. Then he'd wait for a second, and that grin, he would say, and it probably wasn't as good as you thought it was.
That's a lot of truth.
So I think if I've learned anything, it has been get it in perspective. Don't knee-jerk. Don't do something crazy during a difficult time. Think it through. Go to people with wisdom, especially godly wisdom, and read about other people. Carmen used to say, his dad would tell him, learn from other people's mistakes. You can't live long enough to make them all yourself.
It's true.
When I saw what lay before me, Lord, I cried, what will you do? I thought he would just remove it, but he gently led me through. Without fire, there's no refining. Without pain, no. Without flood, there's no rescue. Without testing, no
so worthy of our praise. Let's worship him together. Sinner slain.
Praise the Lamb for sinners slain.
Give him glory, all ye people. His blood can wash away
the
vocal band, five member, has never sounded better. The harmonies are just great, and the music you guys are doing is, it's innovative. I mean, even after 30 years, it's found a way to reinvent itself. And Homecoming is going strong. Song, you guys written any songs lately?
Yes. We don't write as many. When you're young, you write everything that comes in your mind. In fact, I got a young friend who's published a lot of books, and I said to him, in jest, I said, have you ever had a thought that you did not publish? And I would say that, I would say that to young writers. It's okay for you to write tunes without a succinct idea, but the tune is probably going to be for you and for a few people around you, and that's okay. It's probably not going to be for the world, so don't feel bad about it, you know.
Right, right.
And but every now and then you come up with a song that's bigger than you, and it's big enough for the world. We wrote 52 songs before we wrote He Touched Me. I think that should be very encouraging to young writers.
Well, it's your 75th birthday. With age comes honesty. So after 75 years, are you... fed up? Are you tired and you just want the world to know that you're not going to take it anymore? or is there something that you, after 75 years, you're too old to change and this is the message you have for them? Or, hey, time is short and I got to say this and I got to say it now. And what would that be?
I think most definitely, I think the older you get, you want to say, God, help me to focus in on the things that are important. The things that last forever. And a lot of the stuff, I think, in our early life that we just were just yelling and screaming and hollering about, as you get older, you finally say, you know, I'm not so sure I should spend that much time and energy with. One of the questions I asked Howard Goodman on the third video, I said, Howard, have you learned anything after living this long, and how have you changed? And I'll never forget, he said, well, Bill, I think I'm letting a lot more folks into heaven these days than I used to when I was younger. And the good news of the gospel, it wasn't our job in the first place.
That's true.
And I think if I'm learning anything in these days, I'm learning how to be, and I'm learning maybe how to maybe talk less. Except when you are asking me questions, I'm trying to be as articulate as I can. But I think I'm focusing in more on just being.
Oh, my name's Cancel, Satan's friends, Cancel, Satan's effects, Cancel, for the ransom was paid.
Now I stand
worthy as I am.
As I am.
not acquainted with the computer, but he is online. Not sure how that works, but you can find it at Gaither.com. All the information, all the music. I mean, that's a treasury of an American art form simply at that website at Gaither.com, all in one place. So more details there.
We got a lot of smart people in our office who run that
that's
website.
Right, that's right. 75 years. Happy birthday, Bill.
Happy birthday to you. Happy
birthday. You've been listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Each week, Daniel brings you exciting music, conversation, and news updates from the world of Southern gospel. You can hear many of the interviews again online at danielbritt.com. Make a date next week for Daniel Britt and Friends.